Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the Political Center, and today we have a New Year's episode of Both Sides of the Aisle with John Dougal on the right.
Hey, that's me over here on the right. Yippee!
And,
Happy New Year.
Shireen Gourbani on the left.
Hello, listeners. Hi, everyone. Happy New Year. Happy to be with you.
All right. So 2023 lies ahead of us. I'm a big New Year's person.
I'm still writing 2022 on my checks.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're still
I'm one of those
checks.
That kind of gets the blues going into Christmas and then I perk up for the New Year.
Oh, fantastic.
It's this thing
Great.
About being reborn, rebirth, renewal.
Do you do like resolutions?
Oh, I do.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I'm a big New Year's person. It just really suits my personality well. I bring a lot of positive energy into every New Year. Now, I will say
she's got 20 pages to it. It's spiral bound. It's the whole thing. It's just like those formal reports
I don't like odd numbers.
Okay.
So I have to kind of get over that for 2023.
All right.
But it makes me think that in public policy, we should be thinking about Governor Cox and his budget. We can talk in our next edition a week from now on the legislature and the upcoming session. But Governor Cox released his budget, and we should just give it some time. $28.4
billion. Big budget, biggest ever.
Yeah.
And people don't understand how big $28 billion is.
Right. It's really hard to, I think, for the average person to wrap their mind around. But I'm also wondering just kind of over time, Natalie, you've worked on budgets. When you were doing budget work for the state, what kind of number were we talking about then?
You know, I started with Governor Bangeter in 1985, 1986. I remember when the budget was about $8 billion. And listeners have to remember that, you know, there was a time when we were 1.7 million Utahns. We're 3.4 now. So you've added over a million people. Costs have gone up. And then we're asking government to do things it hasn't done before. It used to be we had all this open land that you could just go preserve a corridor and, you know, build a freeway. But now, no, you expand I-15 in Davis County. You've got to go, you know, eminent domain homes.
Yeah.
And it's this age-old thing, John, that growth doesn't necessarily pay for itself.
Yep. And you've also got the dynamic, which is clearly we're getting more out of our taxes these days economically than I think we've had in the past. And so therefore, it's somewhat from a legislative perspective, burning a hole in their pocket. Mm. You got Utahns demanding additional services, like you said, and additional money there to pay for it.
Yeah.
And so they expand government from beyond what we had seen maybe a decade ago or two decades ago.
So under the great leadership of Sophia DeCaro, she's a colleague of mine, I think very highly of Sophia, she's the state budget director. And Governor Cox puts out a budget, has $1 billion in tax relief. I'll read off some numbers here. $27 million in air quality initiatives, $200 million in agriculture water optimization, $100 million towards a statewide trail network. And then we should mention teachers, Shireen.
Yeah.
A raise for teachers. I think it's $4,600 in compensation.
$4,100
and then the rest is compensation.
Plus benefits on top.
Yeah.
So quick reaction.
So the price tag for this is $200 million in the budget to support teachers in our state. And, you know, a big part of this, I think, is embedded in a bigger conversation about a lot of educators leaving the field. We have people who cannot afford to live in the communities where they teach. We know that this is a problem across education. We also know that there, you know, is a bigger conversation also happening around how much we spend on the students. Per pupil spending is what we talk about, but Utah typically shows up in the bottom, you know,
couple of states
very regularly for how much we invest in each of our kiddos. And so I think this is all part of a bigger conversation. But we also know that that conversation, and I know we're going to talk about the legislature later, but is tied to this conversation around vouchers, which just kind of keeps coming back. This is the, I think, effort that will not die. It's a zombie bill or zombie effort in the legislature to really take those public dollars and, you know, let individuals allocate those into private schools. And all of this is kind of tied together, I think, in a broader conversation about, you know, those kind of core jobs that we really need people in the state. We really need good teachers in the state. So I'm curious to see where this goes.
John, there's a tax nuance in the budget that I know this is getting really specific, but it really intrigued me. The governor's put aside $84 million in tax cuts directed to pregnant women and families. He wants to count an unborn child as a deduction, if I understand this right. And then we've got $8.7 million for 12 months of postpartum Medicaid coverage. So, this is a pretty pro-family budget.
Yeah, so I can speak to this. I think that if we are going to be living in a state where people have very little choice around having children, we should see an even more robust budget to support young families, kiddos, moms in this state. And I'm excited to see $8.7 million in funding extended to postpartum Medicaid expansion. So basically, right now, the window time that individuals stay on Medicaid after giving birth, I think, is 6 months, and this would expand it to a year. And when you think about the impacts that that might have in a kid's life or in a parent's life, just reducing that stress, getting in for those early checkups, identifying any, you know, issues that may come up early in a kiddo's life, this makes a big difference and really helps, I think, with our new moms who we know are struggling. When we think about some of the mental health dollars, again, excited to see $54 million in mental health resources. But we also know that, you know, postpartum depression, you know, moms kind of struggling in that period after giving birth is real, and we could use more resources there too. So I think there's a lot going on here that's good to see. Another piece of this that I think is tied into kind of the broader conversation around families is $53.5 million into domestic violence prevention. And I was just looking at the numbers of the data on individuals experiencing homelessness in our state, or those that interact with the system. I think just over 24,000 people interacted with our homeless services in the state. And for women in particular, one of the driving factors of that is domestic violence. So when we think about kind of those big things that are happening in people's lives that really impact their health, domestic violence, trying to provide safe places for people to live, interventions, all of that, this is good to see. But, you know, I certainly think we could do more in this space. I maybe would add some other things to the list, but this is good.
John.
I want to step us back to education. Okay. I know Shireen expressed her concerns about vouchers. From my perspective, we get too wound up about this is the only system that we can have. And if your kid, and many kids do well within our traditional public system, but if you're one of those kids that does not do well, whether you have a different learning style, whether you have dyslexia, other things like that, that your school district doesn't really meet the needs, you're stuck. Mm-hmm. And we also have to be honest that sometimes we have students that they have the tyranny of the zip code. They have various socioeconomic challenges. Mm-hmm. And yet the school does not help them excel beyond those. It just, you know, your destiny is your zip code for too many students in this state. And so I think vouchers and the concept of helping subsidize the education for students, but getting them the education that helps them excel, I think is an important thing that we should be doing. And I don't think we should just dismiss it because it's not part of the traditional thing. We need to be looking to say, how do we meet the learning needs of each and every student, whether it's in this system or in another system?
Yeah, and I think sometimes, we could certainly have a much deeper conversation on this, but we know that often private schools are not the places where there are as many resources for individuals who learn differently, though sometimes they are specially driven to address those students. But when you talk about kind of the tyranny of the zip code, right, what we know is that many people simply don't have school choice. And so having, you know, really good schools, really good public schools is absolutely central to investing in our kids. And I think there may be some middle ground here somewhere. I'm not totally sure what it is. Education policy is not my expertise, but I do know that many of the opportunities that I've been afforded were provided to me through early education in public systems, and I went on and graduated from a Catholic high school. So I've experienced many sides of this, and I know it's complex for families, and I just hope that we see a robust investment in those public servants that are in our education system.
When you talk about complex for families, what they see is sometimes it works great for these kids, but not for that one kid. And so, you know, the family's got to say, how do we help little Jimmy, you know, Bobby and Susie, forgive me for using 70s names, but that's my generation. You know, it's going well for them, but this one student, yeah, we're having challenges there. How do we find something that better meets their needs?
John, what grade would you give the governor's budget from what you know about it?
Maybe a B for big.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
I was going to say B for big. Wow, there's so much in there. At the end of the day, what I tell folks is don't judge the input to the legislative process, judge the outcome. And so that's where I'm going to say I want to hold off on a grade to see what actually comes through.
Shireen, do you want to give it a grade, or what do you want to do?
I'll just say I'm, you know, proud of some of the investments we talked about, some of the stuff around moms and supporting moms, and then also really big investments in affordable housing. These are things that I'm proud to see in there. I'm grateful to see in there. We, you know, talked about trails, investments in trails,
there's an A.
State employees.
That's one of those new expansions.
These are A's for me. So there's a lot of stuff that I'm proud to see in here. I'm grateful for the work that goes into this. And Sophia DiCaro is a rock star, so I'm grateful for her service to our state.
And I want to ask, who got the dog for Christmas?
Yeah. Hey, well, and then just to close out the segment, then we're going to talk about if you were king for the day, John, or you're queen for the day, Shireen, what would you do in 2023? But let's give...
So gender's typical.
Yeah, let's give...
I'm going to be king, so...
Let's give the governor and the legislature an A for fiscal responsibility. Our state rainy day fund, budget reserve accounts, this is for disasters, for education, for Medicaid, for just general purpose, you know, challenges, $1.4 billion. In a savings account right now. That's, you know, and that's after a pandemic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and after we had the Great Recession.
Yeah.
People wanted us to drain that rainy day fund overnight. And we judiciously cut budgets and used the reserves, the rainy day funds, and never actually drained it over the multi-year period dealing with the downturn.
Shireen, do you know who sponsored the legislation to create the rainy day fund?
Was it John Dougal?
No. It was before my time.
It's Olene Walker.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Really wonderful contribution of our former governor and lieutenant governor. Well, in our next segment, we've got more New Year's episode, so stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. To hear all our in-house programs, you can go to the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to keep public radio alive on KCPW.
Shireen Gourvani on the left.
John Dougal celebrating on the right.
Natalie Gochner celebrating the new year in the political center. And some people sometimes will say, oh, you moderate both sides of the aisle. And you both know I'm offended by that because I'm an active participant in the dialogue.
That's true.
Right. That's right.
It's very not active. Right or left. Yeah.
But a few weeks ago, we were unsupervised and we had a lot of fun doing that.
I like to take the best ideas from both sides and not be so, binary?
Yeah.
How's that?
Yeah.
Now, we have a listener in Cache Valley, Nathan Bringhurst.
Yay,
hey, Nathan!
An active listener of the program. His mother, Carrie Bringhurst, is the director of Utah Public Radio. And I got to meet Nathan recently. He gave me a big hug. He's a big fan of the show. And Nathan, we just want to tell you that we are grateful for your engagement and interest in public policy.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope, John and I hope we get to meet you one day too. But, you know, it's really lovely. It's unusual, but every now and then, you know, somebody will stop me and say that they're a listener to the show. And I just thank you so much for listening, to sticking with us through the years, through the weeks. You know, you're spending your New Year's week with us. We're happy to have you listening. And we're so happy that you got to meet that individual.
Yeah, Nathan was great. Yeah. Okay. On the New Year's episode here, I want to talk about, Shireen, if you were queen for the day in 2023.
Or king for the day. You choose. Yeah. Self-identify however you'd like.
What would you like to do? You know, I'm going to give you a wand and you get to wave it and something happens.
Yeah. So no surprise. If I could just wave a wand and have anything happen, I would eliminate poverty. I know that sounds kind of, you know... bleeding heart liberal, I guess, as I am. But I think about, you know, some of those big investments, some of the things that we talked about in the budget, housing the unhoused, thinking about what we might do to really change the trajectory of individuals' lives who are living in cyclical poverty. But I would say on like a more maybe petty, self-serving side, I would also like to see, can we have wine in the grocery stores already? I'm also interested in things like more neighborhood bars. I know that this is kind of a niche topic, but when I think about, you know, how much I hear about how the state supports small business, it's really difficult for bar owners to have bars. And I think, too, if we want to, you know, keep people in their neighborhoods and not driving on our roads intoxicated, more neighborhood bars. But I really think there's kind of a bigger one that is maybe a little touchy-feely, but I do think that if I could change one thing, I would have people spend more time, just as I have the extreme privilege to do with both of you, speaking to those who have different political beliefs than they do. I think that we are moving into a really dangerous space in our democracy where we do not speak to each other. We don't see the humanity or dignity in each other in the ways that we may be used to. I think we're on the precipice of really falling apart when it comes to that. So I would say, you know, if you have the opportunity over this holiday season, if you've had the opportunity to engage with those who maybe hold different political beliefs than yours, I, you know, Godspeed read. I hope that conversation went well, but do it more often. I think it's good for our brains and our hearts.
I love this.
It worked great at Thanksgiving, didn't it?
Shereen, I love this tied into a New Year's resolution to listen to somebody not because they're like you, but because they're different than you.
Yeah.
Yeah. John, you're...
Well, and it's part of that dynamic of tell me why you think that way. Help me understand your perspective.
Yeah. And I always say if you listen, you're showing respect. And if you show respect, you're taking a step closer. And then usually they'll respect you back and take a step closer to you. John, you got a wand. What are you going to wave?
First thing, you know I'm passionate about education. I would love to instill a culture of educational excellence. We've got pockets of it here and there, mm-hmm. whether it's in public or higher ed. We have so much potential that from my perspective, we just aren't materializing on. We're not capitalizing on it.
This is changing what my wish is going to be because I'm going to take that wand from you and I want you to be the superintendent of public education. Oh, but keep going.
There you go.
Because you are passionate about it and you know a lot about it. So, but keep going.
The other thing is, at the federal level, I would balance the budget and cut federal spending and bring more of it back to the state level and have states, if you will, levy the tax and spend it, the money much more accountable. I mean, I describe it if, you know, locally, if Park City wants to be liberal and Provo wants to be conservative, well, so be it. But if we want to say Utah wants to be more conservative and California wants to be more liberal, so be it. But we have all these battles, and both sides of the aisle have learned how to spend money out of control and borrow to spend.
Yeah, there's so many things we could change. You know, I started thinking, term limits would be on my list, but my initial list.
I know you have one that I also agree with, but I won't steal your thunder.
Yeah, what are
they? I'm not sure which one, but my big one right now, we're all thinking about this border crisis and whether you had a Republican in the presidential office or a Democrat, let's be clear, the crisis would still remain. Washington has demonstrated an unwillingness to deal with this problem. And I've learned from talking to my connections in D.C. that neither of them wants to give the other side a victory. That's what stops us from acting.
Well, they want to use it for fundraising, for campaigns and everything.
That's unacceptable. So my idea is I want the faith community to step up big time here because this is a humanitarian crisis. And I get this feeling that if the faith community stood up and said, we're better than this, and basically said, you might say, okay, Natalie, that's lofty thinking, but if you're a person—
you're queen for the day.
Okay, right. If you're a person of goodwill who wants to live in this country, who can clear a criminal background check, who's passed a health check, who we can bring in and give you auto insurance and health insurance, we certainly have the need for them in terms of jobs. Let's find a way to solve the humanitarian crisis and what we have as an economic need in this country. And I want the faith community to unite. And by doing that, it will give our politicians more pressure and confidence to act. So that would be my big idea.
That's a great one.
That's the one I agree with as well. I mean, immigration is something I worked on when I was in the House. But I describe, if you want to come live, work, and have a better life, I welcome you.
It's pro-family.
If you want to commit crime and live on the dole, sorry, you got enough.
Yeah, but immigration changes can be pro-family. They can be pro-economy. They can be, pro-public health. They can help with public safety. I mean, there's just so many things good that we had. Okay, I'm not done, though.
Okay,
you guys, you got to give more.
Well, I had a long list. Go ahead.
I got others, but I'm going to go with Utah Beautiful Movement. I would love our state to take some of this surplus and set aside an endowment for the future that looks after the incredible beauty of this state. And whether it's—
What does that mean, though?
Whether it's beautification of our roads, whether it's public spaces, whether it's investing in signages and whatnot on our trail system.
More public art? Another whale?
Sure. But it's this idea that welcome centers as you come into our state.
Yes.
Just the way that we present ourselves. Our mountains are so spectacular. Our red rock so spectacular. Let's invest in keeping those things preserved.
I love it. I want to live under your rule. Anything else on the list?
There's more, but you guys should each give an idea.
Oh, I gave so many. Let's hear one more.
Okay, John, you're with me on this. In public education, I would invest in principals and teachers. Principals are the unit of the business unit that takes care of education, right? They're the boss.
Right there in the school, right at the grassroots level.
So I would give principals more training. I would give them more pay. I would have differential pay. I would pay great teachers more than teachers that don't meet certain standards. I would pay teachers that are in demand, STEM teachers more. I just would.
Yeah.
The economy is demanding that.
Well, if we want the best and the brightest, considering going into teaching and sticking in teaching,
you
got to recognize what the market forces are.
Yeah. Okay.
So I have a little one, but I think this one would have a huge impact. I am very proud of my partner. My husband is a delivery person for Meals on Wheels. So he does Meals on Wheels around, actually in Murray. And I think that that has really opened his eyes. And we've been having many more conversations about the lack of support that we have for our aging population. So thinking about ways to better support individuals as they age in our state is something that's a priority for me. And really thinking about the highest quality of life and connection and loneliness, all of those issues are on my mind. So finding solutions around those issues would be on my list.
I love when you say that this type of thing changes you, meaning your husband sees things that have changed him.
Yeah.
Yeah. John, do you have another one you want to add to the list, or you want me to jump?
Do I just say world peace?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, especially when you talk about Ukraine and what's going on over there, it's just horrific to think that we're in this condition. And we act like we're getting more sophisticated with the years and the decades that go by. And yet we're reverting to, you know, what looks like kind of my childhood with the Cold War. And it's just disturbing in terms of those dynamics.
Yeah.
And we were always told, you know, when we traded and opened kind of dynamics of that, and yet things have run off the rails in the last few years, especially.
Yeah, I think about executions that we're seeing of protesters in Iran, certainly a lot of political unrest out there.
John, a New Year's episode, what book would you recommend people read in 2023? Have you got one or two books?
I'll give you two books.
Okay.
They're a few years old, but one of the books is Love Your Enemies, How Decent People Can Save America from the Culture of Contempt. By Arthur Brooks. So Love Your Enemies. Politically, I even gave this to a person just last week. But it's one of those things.
It wasn't me.
It was not you. But it's one of those dynamics, which is, you know, he doesn't just say you need to come to the middle, I'll just get along. But he says, we shouldn't be debating less. We need to be debating better.
Yeah.
And we need to be coming from an area of love, wanting to understand another, and not contempt. Uh-huh. Now, I disagree with Shireen. I disagree with Natalie. Oftentimes, and yet there's not contempt. I'm not sitting there going, Shireen, you're evil. I can't believe you believe that. Yeah. I know she's coming from a perspective where she thinks it's a good idea, even though I disagree, but I want to learn from her perspective. Mm-hmm. And we want to debate better when it comes to that. The second book I would give folks is Thanks a Thousand by A.J. Jacobs. And this is a guy who wanted to thank folks for having a part in preparing his morning beverage, if you will, coffee. Okay. And so he thanked 1,000 people, anywhere from the barista that served him, that most people didn't even look at when they placed their order, all the way to the guy that cleaned up animal droppings around the water reservoir, and everywhere in between, painting the lines on the highway, raising the coffee crop, everything else like that, designing the cup. And it's just a powerful thing when you sit there and thank people and express gratitude for what they've done. You know, it's a quirky little book, but I think it's a powerful message.
Love it. I love those. Shireen, you got a book or two.
I do. Of course, mine are different. So a book that I engaged with this last year that I really enjoyed was Cast by Isabel Wilkerson. And this is really looking at, you know, structural inequity in our society and understanding it from a really profound perspective. I thought that was a great read. I just picked up Under the Skin by Linda Villarosa, which is about the toll of racism on our public health system. So I spend time in, you know, healthcare and thinking about broader health trends. So this is one that I'm interested to engage in as I head into the new year. But I just am about three quarters of the way through There, by Tommy Orange. This is a book that was a Pulitzer Prize finalist in 2019 about Native identities. And it's a heartbreaker. It's a wonderful and beautifully written book. So those are that's my nonfiction rec, I guess, for the year.
I love it. This is good. This is good content.
What
do
you do? Yeah, what's on your list?
Well, you know, I did A Time to Build by Yuval Levin. Yuval's an American Enterprise Institute scholar. He's the guy that's really pioneered a lot of thinking on institutions and the decline in institutions. And it's a terrific read about the decline of the media, the decline in, you know, higher education, the decline in families, the decline in organized religion. I mean, it's just all these durable forms of human life, things we do together, associational life, and how they're in decline. And as they decline, we turn to political performance art.
Mm. Or, we're in it.
Yeah, we're in it. Or media as, you know, a type of activism instead of independent, you know, journalism. So A Time to Build is one I'd recommend. And the other one is same author as Love Your Enemies, John, Arthur Brooks, who is an impact scholar at the University of Utah, thanks to President Taylor Randall's leadership. But he wrote the book From Strength to Strength. And it's a terrific read about how to move as you age from one strength to another, like from being an entrepreneur to being a coach, you know, from being someone who's inventing things to being someone who mentors.
And Natalie gave me a copy of this book just a few
minutes ago. It's an awesome book. So I give high recommendations to that. So you got Love Your Enemies, Thanks a Thousand, Cast, Under the Skin, There, A Time to Build, and From Strength to Strength. Those are some incredible ideas. Last word for a New Year's wish.
You know, I just come from the perspective, baby steps, and keep improving whenever you set your resolution.
Shereen?
Oh, I'm going to, you know, continue to ask people to engage in their communities in meaningful ways.
Oh, great. I'm going to tell everyone to latch on to positive energy. Bring positive energy into the new year. You have a choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and don't let these energy vampires, like, take energy from you. Commit to the great things that are part of life and bring it into the new year. Well, that's our New Year's episode. I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. I've been with John Dougal and Shereen Gourbani. The program's produced by the marvelous Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and Happy New Year.